From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Illinois cast 59 votes for Bernie Sanders and 122 votes for our next president, Joe Biden.
That's the kind of leader our service members deserve. One who understands the risks they face and who would actually protect them by doing his job as commander-in-chief. Instead, they have a coward-in-chief who won't stand up to Vladimir Putin, read his daily intelligence briefings, or even publicly admonish adversaries for reportedly putting bounties on our troops' heads. As president, Joe Biden would never let tyrants manipulate him like a puppet.
Say aye.
Aye.
Repeat your full name.
James R. Thompson.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution.
You're elected four times in a state as diverse as Illinois. To me, that's the ultimate poll. I had a pet phrase I used from time to time. You can always compromise your ideas, but you can't compromise your ideals. While that sounds like a pat statement, it really reflects the nature of the political and legislative process.
That's the former Governor Jim Thompson, the longest-serving governor in Illinois history. He passed away in the past week. We're going to look back at his career with a couple of reporters who covered his tenure. Also, the Democratic National Convention has wrapped up, and a couple of statues at the Illinois State House will be removed. That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. In our panel, practicing social distancing from his home, we have Charlie Wheeler, an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And also with us is Rick Pearson, chief political reporter for the Chicago Tribune. And Rick, it's good to have you with us once again.
Always good to be with you guys.
Well, Charlie, of course, covered the Illinois State House for a long time, and we're going to get to Jim Thompson. Rick, you covered him as well. I'd be interested to hear what your guys' thoughts are on the, again, longest-serving governor in the history of Illinois. But let's start with something that happened this past week, a big political event, the virtual Democratic National Convention. And, Rick, I know you've been covering that quite a bit. A lot different than what we're used to seeing. They are usually scripted events, even more so this time. Did it accomplish, you think, what Democrats wanted?
I think in the end it did, because you would ostensibly be looking at divisions within a Democratic Party that have, you know, really kind of showed themselves 4 years ago with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, were ever present during the primary season, once again with the progressive versus the more establishment wing of the Democratic Party. But unlike 4 years ago, and the real effort I think that Democrats were making this time was to prove that they are united when it comes to defeating Donald Trump and urging a very diverse party to look past their differences on how progressive the party should be, how establishment the party should be, to look past those differences and first look at the bigger picture in their view, which is to defeat the sitting president.
And Charlie, you said you watched some of the bigger speeches, some of the keynote address and Joe Biden's speech as well. Your thoughts on what you saw?
Well, I thought, as Rick said, I think the Democrats, most of them, whichever wing of the party they're in, have kind of come to the conclusion that the most important thing is for the sake of the country, for the soul of the nation, however you want to put it, for our democracy, as Obama said, former President Barack Obama, is to defeat Donald Trump. And so we may not agree on all the points about universal health care, about free college tuition, everything that the so-called socialist wing of the party wants. But on the other hand, one thing we can agree on is that the United States will be much worse if Donald Trump is president for another 4 years in terms of internal strife, in terms of our standing in the international community. By all measurements, we will be a much worse off country if Donald Trump is elected again. I mean, former Vice President Joe Biden, the Democratic candidate, likened it to sort of the forces of darkness against the forces of light. So I think the message that they're trying to get out is the most important thing that we that everyone in the nation should focus on is, do we want four more years of Donald Trump? I assume next week we'll see the Republicans, and they will paint a picture that the United States will return to prominence and will be a land of milk and honey as long as we have Donald Trump, and it will descend into a chaotic ruin if we elect Democrats.
Rick, your thoughts also on Illinois' role in this convention, because we, you know, one of the people I kind of expected to see, at least maybe for one of those 1.5, 2 minute brief statements, was J.B. Pritzker. He's been a prominent governor across the country, certainly in Democratic circles because of his handling of the pandemic. He did not show up. We did see Tammy Duckworth get a brief appearance, and we heard her at the start of the show. So did Illinois play enough of a role in this?
Well, I mean, the fact that Tammy Duckworth got some primetime exposure was, I think, reflective of the fact that, you know, she was in the final list of those that Biden was considering for a running mate. And frankly, she's pretty much become a staple of appearances at the Democratic National Convention. This was her fourth consecutive appearance. I mean, she even appeared when she wasn't even holding a public elected office. And so, I mean, she still has a great reception among Democrats, of course, with her story from being injured severely in Iraq. But Pritzker, I wasn't necessarily that surprised he didn't appear, though, yes, given the fact that he's been very vocal in taking on Donald Trump, that might seem to be somebody you'd want to showcase. I was actually surprised, and I think we saw this not just in Illinois, but in a lot of states, with the truncated nature of the convention. Normally, at a regular convention, one, you know, there are non-primetime speaking slots, but it's also a chance to showcase congressional candidates or freshman congressmen who are in very tight races. I mean, I expected perhaps to see Lauren Underwood, who is seeking a second term in a northwest suburban district that she flipped from Republican to Democrat, defeating Randy Hultgren. I thought same with Sean Casten, another suburban district that he flipped 2 years ago. And also even Betsy Dirksen Lonergan, who is on the national radar in that 13th congressional district in central Illinois. Those would normally be kind of candidates that they would get their, at the very least, even if they didn't make the primetime schedule, would get their 5 minutes at the podium, and that would be pictures to send out to the Democratic base supporters to get them energized.
Well, we can follow the Republicans next week, and like Charlie had said, we'll see what they have to say and making their case for the reelection of Donald Trump. Let me turn to something else. Speaking of J.B. Pritzker, of course, the big issue he's watching, I think, as well on the fall ballot is the constitutional amendment question that will be put before voters, asking if they want to go to a graduated income tax here in the state of Illinois from the flat tax. And Rick, you wrote a story about the fact that this group that he has given quite a bit of money to now is up with its first ad.
Yeah, the first ads of the season by the Yes for Fairness group, which Pritzker has funded to the tune of $56.5 million. And I think, you know, we've talked about this issue in the past where the belief was that the debate over the graduated rate tax amendment would probably be the most expensive political contest on the fall ballot. And certainly with Pritzker's wealth to help back up his signature agenda item, that's one thing. What we haven't seen yet is really kind of a full-scale barrage from third parties, mainly aligned with Republicans in the business community, that are adamantly against shifting from a flat rate tax. That I think we're going to see at some point, and I think it's going to be a number of groups weighing in against it. And it's truly going to be a true air wars battle going on as we get closer to November 3rd.
And Charlie, do you think that the pandemic has slowed that a bit? I mean, I think back in, say, December, January, we were thinking we were going to be hit with that barrage of ads probably starting in June, July, and here we are, you know, getting into later August, and we're finally seeing the first one show up. So the pandemic has captured people's attention, is my guess, and people are just holding back until we get a little bit closer to Election Day.
Well, I think that's true. The pandemic is first and foremost in everyone's mind as they adjust their own lives, they worry about sending their kids to school, all of this stuff. And even in normal times, though, you usually don't see that much attention paid to the political stuff by average folks until later in the season. Traditionally, you didn't start campaigning until Labor Day. Well, that's off now. Campaigning is 24/7, 365. But in a normal year, particularly this year, attention in Illinois, sports fans would be looking at how well the Cubs are doing, how well the Sox are doing. Cardinal fans would be bemoaning that their team doesn't look as sharp as they thought it would be. So you'd be focusing on stuff like that. And you'd be thinking about county fairs. You'd be thinking about the state fair, which would just be wrapping up here in Springfield. And so you would have all these other distractions. Now everything has been replaced, of course, by the pandemic. So I don't think it's that unusual that they haven't gotten geared up and going.
You are listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel this week includes Charlie Wheeler and Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Well, some news occurring just as we sat down to record this show, Rick. Kanye West, the rapper, grew up in Chicago. Of course, a month or a little bit more ago where he came out of nowhere, it seemed, and announced an independent candidacy for president. He filed petitions with the State Board of Elections in Illinois and other election authorities in other states. In Illinois, on Friday morning, he basically, officially, was booted from the ballot for having too few signatures. So your thoughts on Kanye West's attempt to get on the ballot elsewhere now?
Well, this was just a very sloppy effort. And the thing was that in some respects, he was benefited by the pandemic because the federal courts had issued an order that vastly reduced the number of signatures that an independent or third-party candidate would need to get on the November 3rd ballot. You only needed 10% of what you would normally need. In West's case, that meant 2,500 valid signatures. And ultimately, the 8-0 bipartisan vote of the State Board of Elections after binder checks found that he was 1,300 valid signatures short of what he needed. And this is going on. This kind of the sloppiness is being evidenced in other states around the country. Two very important, crucial battleground states, Ohio and Wisconsin, each have tossed him from the ballot. Other states are still waiting.
Yeah, the thought was, Rick, that he might siphon away votes from Joe Biden, the Democratic nominee for president, if he's on a ballot, and might be, like you said, these crucial battleground states. He could possibly tip the balance toward Donald Trump in those states, just having his name on the ballot. That was not the case here in Illinois. We expect that Biden will be the favorite a lot more heavily. But are there any of those battleground states left where he is still a possibility?
I believe Minnesota is still evaluating that, but you're right. In a number of these other states, including Wisconsin, the West effort to get on the ballot had been associated with Republicans or people tied to the local Republican Party. But, you know, in Ohio, for example, it wasn't lack of valid signatures that cost him. It was bungled up paperwork. There had even been polls showing that there was really very little support or evidence that West would siphon off particularly black voters from Joe Biden in a meaningful way that it would help Donald Trump.
Charlie, an update on another story that we've talked about here on this program over the past several weeks. A couple of statues, one of Stephen Douglas, the other of Pierre Menard. He was the first lieutenant governor, for those that might not know who he is, will be removed from the statehouse grounds. The two have ties to slavery. Speaker Michael Madigan had earlier asked for this to happen. The board that works with the Capitol Architect, which is a very little known board, it consists of staff from each of the four caucuses. Well, they voted unanimously this week to remove those statues. It probably will happen sometime before the end of the year. Charlie, just your thoughts again on this whole situation. I know there are some people who feel this is the right thing to do. There are other people who say, hey, don't you have anything more pressing to take care of?
Well, I think part of it is that in the current climate with concern about the systemic racism that's been throughout our history, I mean, Illinois began as a de facto slave state in that we had our first governors were slaveholders. Our first lieutenant governor held slaves up until, I want to say, for the first 15, 20 years of Illinois statehood. Stephen A. Douglas benefited from the fact that his wife inherited a plantation in Mississippi with slaves, and part of the proceeds, the profits from that plantation, helped underwrite or bankroll Douglas's career. So we're now rethinking how we look at those folks, and I think the vote was unanimous, and the oversight board for the Capitol Architect is made up of the Secretary and Assistant Secretary of the Senate, the Speaker and Assistant Speaker of the House, and traditionally the assistants, if there's a Democratic majority, are appointed by the Republicans. That's kind of a deal that's always been worked out. So it was a bipartisan decision to remove these statues. And interestingly enough, there's also a statue of Douglas within the state capitol. And the board is doing a review of all the artwork in the capitol because some of the murals on the first floor don't reflect well on our current attitude towards how people of color should be treated.
Well, I want to save some time here to look back at another leader for the state of Illinois, the former governor, James R. Thompson, again known as Big Jim. He spent 14 years as governor, and he died last week at the age of 84. Charlie, I know you knew him, and we're going to talk to you as well. Rick, you covered him also. Let me both ask both of you, and Rick, you can go first. What stands out the most to you when you think of Jim Thompson?
I actually think what stands out today is what the politics was like in the Thompson era versus the politics that we have today. So often we talk about the issue of civility and compromise and working across the aisle and looking towards getting a bigger goal versus today where the divisions are so great that the parties are siloed. And it's just a winner-take-all kind of mentality that seems to exist. And here, you know, you had Thompson, who was pragmatic, and it was about getting something, at least half a loaf. You look at the fact that, for all practical purposes, and I'm sure Charlie would agree, his legislative floor leader was Phil Rock, the Democratic president of the Illinois Senate. I mean, that says volumes about, you know, how politics was during his tenure. He was also a consummate deal maker, and to achieve, I saw some descriptions where he was described as a fiscal moderate, and I'm not so sure I would necessarily agree with that aspect, particularly when you look at the kind of builder he was and the infrastructure program that he put in place, which no doubt contain plenty of pork projects to help influence some votes.
And Charlie, maybe not a fiscal moderate, but on other politics, he was definitely a moderate. And your thoughts, Charlie, I've talked to you about this before. You believe that if he were to be running or entering politics today, he would probably fall more in line with the Democratic platform than he would the Republicans.
Well, he would certainly be called a rhino, Republican in name only, by today's Republican standards. Because if you look back at his career, he was a very successful governor. He was one of the best governors the state of Illinois has ever had, as Rick said, because he was able to get things done. And the reason he could do that, He was governor 14 years. All those 14 years, Democrats controlled the Illinois Senate. 12 of those 14 years, Democrats, led by Michael Madigan, controlled the Illinois House. And so Thompson had to be someone who could see the other side and who could work with the other side for him to get anything done. And he was very successful at it. He was also probably the best campaigner we've ever seen in Illinois.
Yep.
He had the ability to just walk into any group of people and immediately be, you know, best friends with them. They maybe wouldn't agree with his positions, but they liked him personally. And I remember one occasion, and this really stuck out in my mind, and Sean, we've talked about this before, and I'm sure, Rick, you remember this too. And back in the day, the Chicago papers would assign reporters to the statewide candidates for governor and for U.S. senator for the last couple of weeks of the campaign. You'd basically be on them 24/7. And so this one afternoon, Thompson had been at some event on the south side. I don't remember what it was, but we're coming up Halstead Street, and we stop outside the 11th Ward Democratic headquarters, the heart and soul of the Daily Machine. Thompson gets out, goes in, and says hi to everybody. Of course, they know who he is. And at the time, I thought, man, this is sort of like the Pope going to Hades. Or if you're a Democrat, it's sort of like Satan walking in saying hi to St. Peter. But in any event, he was enjoying it. He was laughing himself silly. So we go out, walk across the street, a couple doors down, and there's Schaller's Pump, which was a longstanding institution in Bridgeport, a place where politicians, Democratic politicians, hung out, and so did people coming from the ballpark, because it was very close to Comiskey Park. And so Thompson goes in, and who's there but Bill Veeck, who owned the White Sox at that time. So Thompson sits down with Veeck, and they spent the rest of the afternoon chatting. And I have to admit, make a confession, this is maybe not professional, but I actually asked Bill Veeck for his autograph.
Well, now, Rick, you've like you said, you covered him for a long time. 14 years he was the governor, though at the end of his time in office, I do remember a lot more criticism about the budget, and I do remember some people also criticizing him later in his career for when he took on the representation of James Heupel, who was the Illinois Supreme Court Chief Justice, and he was possibly being impeached from the Supreme Court. Some people felt that was not a good look for Jim Thompson as well. Your thoughts on what happened late in his career?
Well, I mean, certainly during his latter years, and you can look back to his reelection in 1982, the race against Adlai Stevenson, the first time of that matchup, where he only won by 5,074 votes and was benefited by a Supreme Court decision, a Democratic-controlled Supreme Court, where one justice flipped to basically shut off the recount shortly before Inauguration Day. You know, there was recessionary times then. Taxes were being increased. You know, the 14 years is a long time, and the baggage starts to accumulate. But you're right, then you know, go into his latter career at the chairman of Winston and Strawn, and he was representing Jim Heupel over some issues contending abuse of power there, and then later with George Ryan, who became his running mate in 1982 when Thompson tapped Ryan, who was Speaker of the House, because he felt that he needed a conservative Republican to join him on the ticket, and there, I think it's more a representation of loyalty and institution and respect for the institution and friendship. And sure, it did earn him some disfavor, but I think people understood where he was coming from.
Charlie, again, we've talked again about this before, but I do want to touch on it once more. His legacy, as far as you see it, in state government.
Well, I think one of the things he did is he continued to modernize state government. He tended to hire people based on their qualifications. Now, he wanted to hire Republicans, but he made sure that they were able to do the job, and when they weren't, he canned them. And I remember he was criticized for hiring, for giving legal work to attorneys that he knew personally, and his response was, "You want me to hire him from the Yellow Pages?" And he also, despite the fact that Republican county chairman thought that they weren't getting their fair due in terms of jobs, he also wound up being the defendant in a lawsuit that went to the U.S. Supreme Court and wound up outlawing patronage hiring, not just in Illinois, but everywhere.
Rick, your thoughts on what legacy he leaves behind?
Well, and Charlie just hit on it. It's kind of ironic because, you know, here you had this corruption-busting attorney who comes into state government, but he still had a great belief in patronage. And one of his lasting legacies is that Supreme Court decision, the Rutan decision, that basically became a nationwide standard for political hiring. And so, he did get complaints about his support of patronage, but that's certainly one legacy. But just the fact of, I think, the builder aspects of it, we talk about Sox Park or Navy Pier, but, you know, that was part of the modernization of Illinois, too. And, yeah, Navy Pier is closing now because of the pandemic, but, you know, who thought back when he proposed this McPier deal with McCormick Place that Navy Pier was going to become the state's top tourist attraction?
Let's save some time here for our notes from the field. And, Charlie, let's go to you.
Okay, well, one of the things that made news this past week that I think is very significant was that the FDA approved a saliva test developed at the U of I in Urbana-Champaign to test for COVID-19. And the way it works is that someone who is being tested will drool into a test tube. It will be sealed in a bag, and then it will be tested to see if the virus is in that. And it's a lot quicker because this can be done in a couple of hours. Now, the U of I in Champaign has been doing this for about a month or so, and they've tested something like 50,000 people, and they've been pleased with the results. And the U of I president, President Colleen, and Governor Pritzker both referred to this as being a game-changing method of dealing with the virus.
All right. And Rick?
On a political bent, now that the Democratic convention is over, one of the takeaways I have from the Illinois delegation, I think I find very interesting, particularly when it comes to organized labor. We might be seeing another battle again of Madigan versus Rauner. A lot of the labor folks kept bringing up Bruce Rauner's name and how he was so anti-union. And warning that if you don't support Democrats, you risk the possibility that the kind of proposals, the anti-union proposals that Rauner wanted to bring to Illinois that we see in Wisconsin and other states could come here. That being the counter to questions, obviously, about the continued service of Mike Madigan as the state Democratic Party chairman. And we all remember how the battles were between Bruce Rauner and Mike Madigan.
All right, that's all the time we have for State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.